13th century flavor Inquisition, which is not too far from the truth. I mean, what in the world are they doing having a military court over a CPA license? What's going on here? Well, I think they're bending and twisting the law to do everything they can against this man. Having a secret trial hidden away from the public and press. If the objective of the hearing is to protect the public from the wacko likes of Bannisters, why opt for an executive session dog and pony show? Won't the public be better served exposing Bannister and his ilk in public? Well, I think that's a real darn good question. And the answer to that question, of course, is that the IRS is running scared. They do not want people to understand what's going on. And they're really very terrified that people are going to understand that that they really don't owe taxes, that the whole thing is a fraud. And if enough people understood that, it really could cut the funding from the military-industrial complex. Wouldn't that be such a tragedy? Suppose they just didn't have enough money to go to another war. That is what's going on with this kind of banking system, this kind of tax system. It's been said that the IRS is basically the collection agency for the Federal Reserve System. But with this kind of concentration of monetary power that they're able to do with this unlimited access to the printing press, they can do any war on the planet that they so desire. Way back when, they had a problem with the Spanish-American War. They just couldn't convince enough Americans that they should buy the bonds and to support the war or accept more taxes. So they really redoubled their efforts in terms of creating the centralized bank. And they did a lot of little tricks. Like, one of the little tricks they did is they had the Rockefellers got together and they had the Citizens Committee for Banking Reform. Well, you look at that and you see that nice little organization and think, oh, well, the citizens, oh, they must be for banking reform. Oh, they're for the Federal Reserve System. That's kind of the skullduggery they did. But what that's enabled them to do is concentrate all the power and wealth in the federal government. And when they want a war at this point in time, what can they do? Well, they just crank up the printing presses. They don't have to go ask you, the people, anymore. They don't have to ask you for more taxes or for bonds or anything like that. They just crank up the printing press and away they go. And again, there's always enough money for another war somewhere on the planet. But somehow when it comes down to you having enough money to educate your children the way they should be educated or put a roof over your head without being an absentee father where you're going 40, 60, 80 hours a week, that's the real essence of what the IRS is doing. It's stealing your time away from your family. Well, this is Tom Clooney. I didn't get anywhere near to what I'd like to say, but we'll try it all again next week, next Monday at 7 o'clock. Thank you.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line our good friend Dr. Russell Blaylock. And Dr. Blaylock was a neurosurgeon for many years in Jackson, Mississippi. He wrote a book when he was practicing called Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And we carry that book. It goes into the background of aspartame and MSG and the other excitotoxins and the profound impact they have on the brain of the individual who eats them and on the fetus, the children that the mothers are carrying, if they're drinking their Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi. And then more recently, after his retirement, why he wrote a wonderful book we do carry entitled Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Well, his third book is just out, and I'll tell you, we're having a terrible time getting it. In fact, we've already have over a case of books sold, and we don't even have the books yet, but we'll have them hopefully before long. I'm going to call tomorrow and get a second case of the book on cancer, natural strategies. And give me the exact title, Russell.
Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients.
Natural Cancer Strategies for Cancer Patients. And this book is moving so fast, we can't keep it in stock. In fact, we will have it in stock. They promised it would be shipped the next day or so. And we're just going to get another case of it because this is something people want to know. And people are calling and getting two or three or four copies because everybody knows somebody is getting cancer. Cancer a century ago was relatively rare in the United States. And now we're seeing almost like an explosion of cancer. And there's been so much information learned on the war on cancer. Unfortunately, it's not getting to the people. It's certainly not getting to the doctors. So with that as a background, Russell, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story from there?
Well, basically what this book is about is it's twofold. One is how to prevent cancer, and number two is how to treat cancer using nutrition. But it's also for the patient who's decided, well, they want to go with traditional treatments and undergo radiation treatment or chemotherapy treatments in the conventional way. And what I'm describing in the book is ways that you can increase the effectiveness of your treatment and significantly reduce the complications associated with chemotherapy and radiation treatment. And what this does through this special design nutritional program is it enhances the killing of cancer cells, but it protects the normal cell against the chemotherapy and radiation.
I think the most significant thing that I've learned since I got out of medicine was that there is a great deal of scientific evidence that shows if you eat properly, you'll cut down considerably on your incidence of cancer, and the corollary to that will be, if that really is true, then if you have a cancer, you would think that if you ate properly, it would help your body perhaps to control it or at least to deal with it more efficiently.
Well, what we've also discovered is that cancers aren't stable. They tend to change. So if a person, for instance, develops a cancer, it may be a relatively slow-growing tumor. But because of their diet and because of environmental toxins, the cancer will change its character and become much more aggressive so that it grows and spreads at a very high rate. And that we can alter that by using nutrition, and that is turning very aggressive cancers into much less aggressive cancers, slower growing cancers. And we do this quite successfully. And what's happened in the last 30 years is our epidemiological studies, that is, studies of large populations of people, we discovered that there was only one factor that really made a difference in cancer incidence, and that was their intake of fruits and vegetables. Those who ate a lot of fruits and vegetables had a far lower incidence of cancer of all types versus those who ate very few. Well, now we've sophisticated our science so that we know why that occurs, and it's for many, many reasons. We know a lot about how cancer cells operate, what they need, how they utilize the different systems in our body to grow and spread. and that there are thousands of chemicals in plants, particularly fruits and particular types of vegetables, that can significantly and very powerfully inhibit these enzymes used by the cancer to grow and spread. It can also protect the DNA of cells so that the cells are less malignant. For instance, we know that free radicals play a very big part in cancer growth, and that if you're doing things that increase free radical generation, which I describe in the book, things like excess exercise, exposure to pesticides, herbicides, mercury, fluoride, lead, all of these things increase free radical generation in the body. If you do that, the cancers tend to grow a lot faster. They tend to spread further in the body, so that a cancer that ordinarily could be well controlled suddenly becomes an uncontrollable terminal cancer. And a lot of these things can be reversed by these nutritional programs. But the lesson I try to teach is that you have to follow the entire program. You can't just piecemeal and decide, I like this part of it, so I'll do that, but I don't like that part, so I won't do that part.
Well, now, one of the things I've learned, of course, is the relationship between milk and prostatic cancer. Almost, just so many of my friends, doctors I practice with, good, close personal friends, have developed cancer of the prostate. I mean, this is just endemic in males today. Practicing medicine for many years, you know, certainly we all saw cancer of the prostate, but nothing like we're seeing today. Would that be a fair statement to make?
Yeah, several studies. There was one study that came out that showed an epidemiologic link to milk consumption and prostate cancer. The men who drank the most milk had the highest incidence of cancer. Also, follow-up studies confirmed that, but they, in addition, indicated that not only did they develop cancer, but their cancers were more likely to be incurable if they drank a lot of milk, cow's milk.
And yet that is not anything we ever hear. All we hear is, you know, got milk. You know, I don't know if you have the same commercials back in the East that we have here, but the milk commercials are the finest commercials we have. And, you know, you just you watch those commercials, you want to go have a nice, cool glass of milk. And I've always loved a cool glass of milk. And although recently I've cut back on it for some reason, and then, of course, after talking to you and learning what they've learned about the relationship between the milk and the other dairy products and cancer, and the more you take, why the higher your incidence is of getting a extremely malignant type of cancer?
Exactly. And, you know, they've done studies before on milk. And what they were doing is looking at all the foods that might possibly be related to cancer. And what they discovered is that of all the foods, milk was most closely associated with cancers of several types, particularly lymphomas and leukemias, and now prostate cancer. We know that cattle, the most common malignancy in cattle is leukemia and lymphoma. And that is caused by a virus in cattle, and that is passed. This virus is passed into the milk. Well, the process of pasteurization does not kill all of these viruses. We know that there are many white blood cells that are filled with these carcinogenic viruses in the milk. So that when you drink lots of this milk, you're drinking a lot of these carcinogenic viruses. And there's growing evidence that people are contracting leukemia and lymphoma from drinking milk. So that's another way. In the prostate cancer, it appears that it's correlated to the calcium content of the milk and the protein content, so that the more of this intake of calcium you have from the milk, then the greater your risk of having prostate cancer.
And yet, I've gone to all sorts of medical meetings talking about prostate cancer and PSA and treatments for cancer, and I've never once heard mentioned what you just mentioned, and I know what you're saying is accurate. And I think it's amazing that this is not getting to the general population. This is what's so frightening. And I'm sure the people who are on the milk board, the last thing they want is to raise this question in the minds of the people.
Well, you know, it's interesting that this appears in the premier cancer journals, the peer-reviewed cancer journals. It's discussed at cancer meetings. So it's no secret among the oncologists, those who deal with cancer, and the cancer scientists. This is something that's pretty well agreed upon. Like you say, what's happening is this information is staying among the physicians and it's not being released to the public. We also know that cow's milk is the number one association with juvenile diabetes. And that was proven recently. In fact, not very recent, 1999, an article appeared in the Journal of Diabetes, which is the leading journal of diabetes in the United States and in the world. And this article did very careful immunologic studies and showed that milk was producing this juvenile diabetes in genetically susceptible infants. But there was no announcement to the public. When I first read this article, I said, well, certainly this will be on the front page. We have tens of thousands of children who suffer terribly from juvenile diabetes, yet there was not one word in the newspapers of the world or the media outlets informing mothers, do not give your children cow's milk or cow's milk products before the age of two. They still have formulas that contain cow's milk protein that precipitates juvenile diabetes. And so we're seeing a leading cancer that's growing at an increasing rate, prostate cancer. We're seeing juvenile diabetes, which is a major problem. And the reason we're not hearing about it in the general media is because of the milk board, which contains billions of dollars, making billions of dollars and have millions and millions of dollars to spend on advertisements. They advertise in every media outlet, magazines, newspapers, and they don't want to risk that income, so they keep quiet about these stories.
Now, what about a child who has breastfed until maybe they're a year of age and then put on to food? After 2 years, what about drinking milk? Is it safe for them to drink it at least during their growing years or not?
Well, it's still not safe because then you have the problem of leukemia in that age group. So here you're feeding them something that we know contains live leukemia viruses. When they did herd studies, they found some herds, 80% of the cattle were infected. On average, about 20 to 30% of herds are infected with this leukemia lymphoma virus. So the idea of giving these children, even after age two, regular exposures to cow's milk is going to increase their risk of leukemia lymphoma. Plus, there's other studies that indicate that it may increase arteriosclerosis, even the low-fat fat milk. In fact, the low-fat milk was worse than the whole milk. So there's a lot of reasons not to start your children on milk. The milk producers put out the propaganda, and they now have women and mothers convinced that if their children don't drink milk, their bones will just crumble and turn soft. Well, then that would make us the only animal species in the entire world that has to drink milk after weaning and another animal's milk. So that it's ridiculous. You know, giraffes and elephants, they don't continue to drink milk. You get plenty of calcium from eating fruits and vegetables and even meats. So you don't need other sources of calcium. You have plenty of sources of calcium without consuming milk.
Well, I remember years ago, my good friend Dr. Lorraine Day was saying exactly what you're saying, and I didn't want to believe it because I enjoy milk so much, but I think between the two of you, we pretty well convinced me that I'm going to have to change my dietary habits, and certainly you mentioned on one of the other programs that cottage cheese would certainly be fit into exactly that same category.
Yeah, anything that's made from cow's milk, anything that's high in calcium is going to increase your disease rate, particularly in the case of prostate cancer.
And this is really such a devastating cancer, but the fact that either the more milk you drink, the higher the grade of malignancy, that indeed is a disturbing thing. Most prostate cancers are fairly benign. You can sometimes outlive them. They go on almost forever. But what about younger men? If they get prostate cancer, isn't that usually a more malignant form?
Yes, it's more malignant, and this is the problem with the milk drinking, is it'll turn an operable or a curable prostate cancer into an incurable one. And this is kind of what we're seeing. We're seeing more men with inoperable prostate cancer. So it's not just the increased rate of prostate cancer overall, but an increase in the inoperable type of prostate cancer. And we know that your diet overall plays a major role in reducing prostate cancer. For instance, a commonly found flavonoid in vegetables called quercetin is a potent inhibitor of prostate cancer. We know selenium potently inhibits prostate cancer. We know that the type of oil you eat plays a big role. People who consume a lot of the corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, those oils all dramatically increase prostate cancer occurrence, whereas the omega-3 type oils, particularly the DHA component of omega-3 oils, dramatically reduces the incidence of prostate cancer. So even if you have a cancer, it'll make the cancer grow very, very slowly.
Now, could you explain what the DHA component is for our listeners? I remember that a lot of people are out there listening, and they're not acquainted with some of the terms. What's the DHA?
Well, there's two components in fish oils, omega-3 oils. One is called EPA, and the other is called DHA. The DHA is docosahexaenic acid, and that's just a biochemical name for that form of the fat. Actually, all we need is the DHA. Our body can convert about 8% of DHA to EPA, and that's the amount that we use in our metabolism. The DHA is the one that's being found to be the very powerful inhibitor of cancer and cancer growth, and it does that by inhibiting some very important processes that cancer needs to grow. For instance, angiogenesis, DHA inhibits that process. It also inhibits the COX-2 enzyme, which has a lot to do with many types of cancer growth, but particularly prostate, colon, breast, and ovarian cancer. So it powerfully inhibits that enzyme, and we know that prognosis is directly related to the activity of that enzyme. So if you have a lot of COX-2 enzyme activated in these types of cancers, your chances of survival are very little. But if you're suppressing that COX-2 enzyme, either with DHA or some of the flavonoids from fruits and vegetables, your prognosis improves dramatically.
All right, fine. Now, you use the word flavonoid. Explain where people would get that. Which the specific vegetables would contain those flavonoids, which are so beneficial?
Yeah, all vegetables and all fruits contain flavonoids. There's about, so far, 5,000 flavonoids have been identified. And these are very complex chemicals. They used to be called bioflavonoids. But what they're discovering with these flavonoids is they have some very, very interesting properties that protect you against not only cancer, but degenerative brain disorders, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, every kind of degenerative disease you can name. And the way they do that is they're very, very powerful antioxidants. They inhibit free radicals. And the interesting thing about the flavonoid is they inhibit free radicals of a specific type that are not inhibited by the usual vitamins like vitamin C and vitamin E and the beta carotene. These free radicals that they inhibit are extremely powerful and are associated with all the degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and with cancer. That's one way they do it. The flavonoids also inhibit all the enzymes that cancer needs to grow and spread. That's another way it does it. And it inhibits the angiogenesis, that is the growth of new vessels in the tumor. And so there's many, many ways that these flavonoid chemicals inhibit cancer development and growth.
All right, and when we get back, we're going to explain to our listeners where you get these flavonoids, and they're things that you should be eating on a regular basis anyway in a well-balanced diet. So we'll be back in just a moment or two with our friends up there in the Great Northwest, and if you have any specific questions you'd like to have answered, why, you give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. I was a young doctor. We always think the people who were so concerned about nutrition were a little wacky. As I get older, I find that they keep getting smarter and smarter. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dr. Russ Blaylock. We're talking about his book, Natural Strategy for Cancer Control. Do I have it right?
Whereas it's natural strategies for cancer patients.
For cancer patients. Okay, natural strategy for cancer patients. We'll get it right one of these times. Anyway, we were talking about flavonoids, and so let's just go on with that, although we'll have to repeat that when we get back from this break up in the Great Northwest, because I want people to know where you get these flavonoids. So a repetition sometimes is the way that you get ideas over. So where, what vegetables will you ordinarily get the flavonoids out of?
Well, as I said, flavonoids are present in all vegetables, but the ones that have the most powerful anti-cancer effect are found in what's called cruciferous vegetables. These things like broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cauliflower and kale and those sorts of vegetables. They're very high dense concentration of the flavonoids. In the fruits, you can find other flavonoids that are very powerful cancer inhibitors. For instance, there's a group called anthocyanidins, which are found in grapes, and you find them in currants, black currants, red currants. You find them in celery, parsley, blueberries, Macintosh apples, eggplants, the skin of tomatoes. You find powerful cancer inhibitors. And some spices, like turmeric, has a very powerful cancer inhibitor called curcumin. Raspberries have some very powerful cancer inhibitors called ellagic acid. All of your teas, black tea, green tea, contains some very powerful cancer inhibitors called epicatechins, catechins, and epigallocatechin gallates. So they have some very complicated names. Your fruits have ferulic acid in it. Oranges have hesperidin in it, which has been shown to be a good cancer inhibitor. Camphorol is found in kale and turnip greens, strawberries, black currants, and green teas, and it's a very powerful cancer inhibitor. You find also things called lignans that are in flaxseed, which is a very powerful cancer inhibitor. Lutoolin out of celery and artichoke. Myrcetin is another flavonoid found in cranberries and red wine and green tea, black tea. So you see there's a wide variety of fruits and vegetables that contain some of these very powerful flavonoid cancer inhibitors. And there's just enormous amount of research being done discovering the mechanism by which it inhibits cancer growth and development.
All right, so if we eat the right sort of a diet and stressing fruits and vegetables, then we would have access to a lot of these flavonoids. Now, what about cooking the flavonoids? What about cooking our broccoli and our Brussels sprouts and things of that sort?
Well, most of your flavonoids are quite heat resistant, and so they're not going to be destroyed by cooking. Now, your vitamins, they're generally very heat labile, so they're often destroyed by cooking. Sometimes they're water soluble and end up in the liquid that you cook the vegetables in. So if you pour out the liquid, you're losing some of your flavonoids and a lot of your minerals and water soluble vitamins. So how you prepare the food makes a lot of difference, and I discuss that in some detail in the book, telling you which ones are heat stable, which ones are heat labile. How to choose.
Hey, hold on thought for just a moment. We want to bring our friends back to get with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking before we went to the break there about flavonoids, or they used to be called bioflavonoids, and of course the sources of them are well listed in the book, but Dr. Blaylock was talking about how Brussels sprouts and broccoli and cauliflower and certain types of kale and many of the fruits and vegetables, certainly the tomato skins, things like that would have it. The rather long list of the things that have the bioflavonoids, but they really do seem to be very beneficial as far as preventing cancer.
Extremely beneficial. And like we're saying, there's some evidence even that it can convert some cancer cells to normal cells. So you don't even have to kill the cancer cell. You can convert it to a normal cell.
Well, there are the inhibitor genes. There's the cancer inhibitor genes and the cancer stimulating genes. And will some of these actually work on those inhibitor genes?
Well, all cells have what they call suicide genes in them. And these genes' primary function is if a cell is damaged intentionally by free radicals or whatever process, it is in a lot of danger of converting that cell to a cancer cell. So if that begins to happen, the suicide genes are activated and it just kills the cell off before it can become a cancer. And that's one of the ways that many cancers are averted in our body, because we're always developing cancer cells and destroying them. Now what happens with some cancers is they'll turn off this suicide gene so it can no longer work, and then the cell becomes immortal. Well, and what we find is that some of the flavonoids can turn these cancer genes back on. For instance, resveratrol has been found to be one of those chemicals that's found in the skin of grapes.
Now, what does the resveratrol do?
Well, it turns the cancer gene back on so that it'll kill the cancer cell automatically.
I see, okay.
Also, the resveratrol can inhibit the DNA that responds to, for instance, androgen hormones. We know that, for instance, prostate cancer is hormone sensitive. So if you're getting too many hormones of the androgen type, it'll stimulate the cancer to grow faster. Resveratrol inhibits the reaction of that cell so it can no longer respond to androgens, and that causes the cancer to quit growing. So there's some really unique biochemical ways that these flavonoids are inhibiting the growth of cancer. One of the really exciting areas that they're working is inhibiting an enzyme called aromatase. The aromatase enzyme converts testosterone into estrogen. And inhibiting that that hormone can play a major, major role in inhibiting many types of cancer, particularly brain cancers, colon cancer, even head and neck cancers, breast cancers, ovarian cancers. All these are dramatically inhibited when you inhibit that enzyme. And we know that there's some of the flavonoids are extremely potent at inhibiting that enzyme. For instance, quercetin, which you find in apples and tea and onions, powerfully inhibits it. And camphorol, which can be found in turnip greens and kale and things like that, powerfully inhibits this enzyme. Apigenin, which is found in celery and parsley, is an extremely, extremely potent inhibitor of that enzyme. So this is one of the ways that we have discovered that the flavonoids from fruits and vegetables very powerfully inhibit these cancer-dependent enzymes, and that's undergoing a lot of study.
Well, of course, for many years, why the Seventh-day Adventists have insisted that people not eat meat and that they eat fruits and vegetables, almost have a vegetarian diet. And certainly many of the Seventh-day Adventists really seem to live a lot longer than the rest of us, didn't they?
Well, what they've discovered in all the studies of the Seventh-day Adventists, particularly the ones that are at least near vegetarians, is that their cancer rate is half of everybody else in society, and for some particular types of cancer, it's 70% lower. So, the more fruits and vegetables you eat, the less likely you're going to develop a cancer or degenerative disease of some type.
And didn't it actually have a lower incidence of arteriosclerosis and heart and brain problems?
Right, every type of degenerative disease was lower in them, and for the reason that these flavonoids protect you against numerous diseases, not just cancer.
All right, well, there's so much out here, ladies and gentlemen, and you need to begin evaluating this to determine, whether you believe it or not. I do believe it. We've heard it from a number of sources. I know that Dr. Blaylock has been in the books and the research, reading these articles, and so what you're getting is the product of years and years of research, and of course we're going to crystallize as much as we can here in the next hour or so. And if you have any questions, why don't hesitate to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're talking about his book on natural strategies for cancer. And so you're really in the, and we're not only talking necessarily about strategies for cancer, but if you do have a cancer, some of the things that you can take if you're having chemotherapy or radiation that'll make you feel a lot better, and that where you won't be getting anywhere near as many complications. But we'll talk more about that perhaps in the next half hour. But right now, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported. If you're out there listening to us from across America, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. By radio and shortwave, by internet and by satellite, we have a unique opportunity to bring people the information they're not getting elsewhere, and our goal, our hope, is to progressively expand the stations that are pulling us down, getting back on our evening program onto shortwave and then onto satellite, and then we can get numerous other stations to pull it down, because there's nothing quite like our programs in that we not only look into the issues that face society, but go into the spiritual background of the forces that are working behind the scenes, and we might even suggest that the same forces that are so intent upon withholding so much of the information we talk about on these programs from the general public, because as you get into studying the occult, you find out that there is a population control agenda there. There really is. There are people like Jacques Cousteau, who talked interviewed in article November 1991 issue of UNESCO magazine, which we have, incidentally, if anybody would like to see it, calling for the elimination of 350,000 human beings a day. The elimination of 350,000 people a day. That's November 1991, UNESCO. You can get it from your library, or if you need to get one, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we could show you the quotations from Bertrand Russell, who talks about the importance of having major plagues sweep the world every century so that we just don't get overpopulated, so people can reproduce as much as they want to. And as he said, if a black plague could just sweep the world every generation, we wouldn't have the problems that we do. And that comes from Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society. And these are the people and their ideas that dominate so much of what's going on today. And the fact you haven't heard it simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he's done such extensive work. And if you have not yet read his book, Excitotoxin, The Taste That Kills, going into the background of MSD and the aspartame, which you find in so many of your drinks, of your diet drinks, but if you begin looking at the labels on all the prepared foods, they all have either MSG or aspartame or both of them in those foods, and these never should be released for the public. And the only reason they were released was, well, there was a fellow who got onto the transition team when Ronald Reagan became the president of the United States. This was as he was moving into office, and that man happened to be the president of Cyril Pharmaceutical Company that wanted to get aspartame released as a sugar alternative. There was billions of dollars of profit. That man's name was Donald Rumsfeld, and he used his power to get aspartame through the FDA, and then, of course, he then became the special envoy over to Saddam Hussein, where he worked with and encouraged Saddam Hussein during the early 1980s. That was Donald Rumsfeld, who today is the Secretary of Defense, so interested in destroying his good friend Saddam Hussein. But he's, of course, left the legacy of aspartame, and we're not going to get too much into that, at least not during this part of our program. So let's get back to Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about the types of foods that you can eat that will be beneficial for you as far as avoiding cancer, or if you already have a cancer, you certainly should be eating this sort of food, shouldn't you, Russell?
Exactly. Everybody should be eating it, and generally what we find with fruits and vegetable consumption is that you have to eat a minimum of 3 servings of fruits and vegetables to get any benefit. The optimal level is about 5 to as much as 10 servings of fruits and vegetables. Now people say, well, that's a lot of fruits and vegetables, and it is. And the reason that you have to eat so many is because all of these flavonoids and carotenoids and these biochemicals are locked inside the cells of the plant. Well, plant cells differ from human cells in that they have a cell wall. And unfortunately, we don't have the digestive enzymes to dissolve cell walls. So if you normally eat vegetables, for instance, particularly raw vegetables, unless you chew it into a very fine liquid mush, you're not going to absorb most of these flavonoid compounds. Estimates have shown about 30% are absorbed with eating fruits and vegetables. But if you blenderize them and you break up these cell walls and release all of these chemicals, then you absorb about 90%. And when we look at the studies that's been done on people who undergo these miraculous cures of cancer, what we see is that most of them are blenderizing their fruits and vegetables, and they're consuming a large amount of it, so that they're getting the most benefit by getting very high concentrations of these flavonoids and mixtures of these flavonoids. So that seems to be the secret, number one, is you've got to take in a lot of the liquefied fruits and vegetables. Then second, you have to stop eating the types of food we know that increase cancer incidence and growth. This is particularly true with the oils. We know that the omega-6 type oils, which are like corn oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, peanut oil, canola oil, these oils all promote the biochemical conversion of certain portions of the fat into what's called arachidonic acid, and eventually into prostaglandin PGE2, which is a powerful immune suppressor and promotes the growth and spread of cancer. So if you're consuming a lot of foods made with these oils, your cancer risk is real high. If you develop a cancer, the chance of it being cured is very low.
Well, now, what about using things like olive oil? Is olive oil have any benefit to it? Are there specific types of olive oil that people should be using?
Well, olive oil is a monounsaturated fat, and therefore it doesn't oxidize very easy. Also, olive oil contains a lot of the flavonoids. It contains some very powerful cancer-inhibiting types of flavonoids. In addition, they contain a lot of lignin. Lignin is a fiber-like, soluble fiber substance that in the intestine is converted to two chemicals that are powerful, powerful cancer inhibitors. And recently they've shown that these substances that are derived from lignin, entrodiol is one of them, can powerfully inhibit head and neck cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer. All sorts of cancers can be inhibited by the product of this. So it contains both the flavonoids and the lignin. Now, the problem with olive oil is most of it that you buy is not true olive oil. Most of it is diluted with other oils. For instance, very common Italian olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, is only about 20 to 30% olive oil, and the rest of it is made from hazelnut oil. So in order to buy pure olive oil that is really olive oil, it's very expensive. A gallon would be $20 or $30 or more for a gallon. So it's very expensive to buy real pure olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. But if you do, it's extremely healthy. It can powerfully, powerfully inhibit cancer.
Well, now, is this the green? How do you tell whether it's real olive oil or the mixed with hazelnut?
Well, it'll be cloudy. You know, not look like this clear olive oil that you see that you normally buy. It's going to be cloudy looking. That cloudiness is the flavonoids.
Well, now, what about the color? Is the green better?
The green is the olive component of it.
Okay, so that's what you really want to get. And this really is beneficial because most people, you know, use a little oil in their cooking. But what you're suggesting is most of the oils that we use really are hazardous to our health, whereas olive oil does give us a measure of safety.
Yeah, one way I tell people to convert their olive oil, even this that's mixed with the hazelnut oil. One way to convert it into a very healthy oil is to mix turmeric, the spiced turmeric, with it. Turmeric contains curcumin, which is a very powerful antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and anti-cancer flavonoid. And all you have to do is you can buy turmeric spice just about anywhere. When you're going to cook in it, put it in your pan, just dust the top of it with the turmeric. It'll turn it a bright yellow. And that's a very powerful cancer inhibitor combination. And dramatically increase absorption of the curcumin.
Yeah, well, now, is turmeric, I've never even heard of that. Is this a widely used spice?
The Indians use a lot of it. You'll see cumin and that they use. They put on everything. They put turmeric on everything. It adds a lot of flavor to your food. It's a very bright yellow spice, but you can usually find it in the spice rack.
Well, the thing is, these spices have been used for thousands and thousands of years to add flavor, but they also had medicinal benefits, which most people don't even recognize.
Yeah, many of them contain some very powerful anti-cancer flavonoids. Inhibit other diseases as well because they're anti-inflammatory. What we find is cancer, diabetes, all of these diseases have things in common. And what they have in common, they're all related to chronic inflammation and massive free radical generation, which are also linked between the two. A recent study of cancer patients found that up to 76% of cancer patients had a chronic inflammatory disease at least 7 to 13 years before they finally developed cancer. So we know that chronic inflammation is accounting for the vast majority of cancers. And that's because chronic inflammation produces free radicals. That damages the DNA, and when the DNA is damaged in a particular sequence, it initiates cancer. So that sort of ties all these diseases together. We know Alzheimer's disease is an inflammatory disease. Parkinson's disease is an inflammatory disease. So many of the diseases that we think are different really have a common cause.
Well, is the Alzheimer's and the Parkinson's disease, is this the cause of this, the mercury, or what is it that is actually precipitating and creating the chronic inflammation?
Well, a lot of things can, and when we look at what happens in Alzheimer's disease, for instance, we see that there's so many things that are listed as precipitating causes. For instance, aluminum has been connected to it. Mercury exposure is connected to it. Beta amyloid has been connected to it. Exposure to pesticides is a very strong connection, and herbicides. All of these things have been linked to it, and they have a common mechanism by which they're producing disease, because all of them activate an immune cell in the brain called the microglia. And that microglia is an inflammatory cell, so when it's chronically activated by all of these processes, then your brain is filled with free radicals, and it begins to destroy the connections in the cells. So that gives us the answer as to why there's so many things that seem to be connected to these degenerative brain disorders, as well as cancer.
Well, we seem to be seeing a rash of Alzheimer's disease as well, and I think it's far out of proportion to the fact that we're living longer. There just seems to be much more of this disease today than there was, say, 30 years ago. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, in fact, they looked at this to see is this because the population is aging, and what they discovered is that, no, this seems to be an independent phenomenon, and what's frightening about it is these diseases are now occurring at a much earlier age. It used to be most of them occurred after age 70. Now we're starting to see an increase in the younger ages, in 40s and 50s, even as young as 20. So we're seeing that all of these degenerative brain disorders that used to be considered disorders of aging now are occurring at much earlier ages. Sort of like what we're seeing in type 2 diabetes. That used to be a disease of middle age. Now we're seeing a dramatic increase as young as age 10, 12 years of age. Particularly in our teenagers, there's been a 17% increase in type 2 diabetes. So these diseases that used to be considered diseases of middle age or later are now occurring very early, and it's because we are inundating ourselves with all of these toxins, fluoride, aluminum, mercury, excitotoxins in our food. We know excitotoxins dramatically increase free radical generation in the brain.
And for our listeners who don't recall, that this, of course, is aspartame and MSG.
Right. The disguised products like hydrolyzed protein and soy protein. Soy extract is very high in glutamic acid, just like MSG.
In fact, if you start looking at the labels of all these prepared foods and these wonderful prepared dinners there, frozen dinners, so many of these actually have the excitotoxins in them, but they conceal the name. They call them, hydrolyzed protein?
Hydrolyzed vegetable protein, right. Protein extract, enzymes, natural flavoring. Soy protein extract, whey protein extract, the names just go on and on and on because the law says unless it's pure MSG, 99% pure, they can call it anything they want to. And that's exactly what they do. They'll even put on the label, contains no MSG. And yet you'll see hydrolyzed protein, natural flavoring, soy protein extract. And so they're deceiving the public. They're using the law which allows them to do this. And unfortunately, particularly in the case of soups, we see soups. I look at them in the grocery store, and I'll see they have four or five different excitotoxins in it. So when you drink liquid glutamic acid, you get very high brain levels that occur very quickly. And in the connection to cancer, there's recent research that has been confirmed, which shows that glutamic acid dramatically increases the growth of brain tumors. I mean, just an enormous increase in their growth rate. So here we have cancer patients with brain tumors who are eating meals that dramatically increase the growth and spread of their brain cancers. Yet no one is telling them to avoid these foods, even though it's in all of the cancer literature.
Well, now, what about the Splenda? Certainly people take aspartame because they want to, have something that will give them that sweet taste without having the calories of sugar. But what about Splenda that has been becoming increasingly popular?
Well, I looked up some of the studies on Splenda to see if there was problems, and there's some major question marks with it. One was a 40% shrinkage of the thymus gland in experimental animals that were fed Splenda. The thymus gland is a very, very important immune gland. It establishes your cellular immunity for life and your humoral immunity. So things that would cause a 40% shrinkage of the thymus gland would be a major concern. They also found widespread shrinkage of the lymphatic system in animals that were given Splenda. Again, that's a very important part of your immune system to fight cancer, as well as viruses and bacteria and funguses. So those alone would be enough of a concern. There were some reports of it was acting as an abortifacient, that is, it was killing the baby so that they would undergo spontaneous abortion. So there's some real problems already cropping up. And what's interesting, there's only been about 19 studies done on Splenda. So a very small number of studies has been done are already showing enormous problems.
How did they ever get this thing past the FDA, or did they need to get it past the FDA?
Well, they had to get it past the FDA, but, it's like all of these things. It's revolving doors. These people will approve these products, and the next thing you know, when they're working for the company that they regulated. There's no safeguard to prevent these people who are making these FDA decisions from eventually working for the very companies they're regulating, or consulting firms for these companies. And that's how aspartame ever got approved. It would have never been approved otherwise.
It's sort of like the situation recently where the Air Force was going to lease 100 airplanes from Boeing to use as for fueling, refueling, and it would be a lot cheaper to buy them rather than lease them, but the Air Force kept insisting it would be better for them if they simply leased the planes and gave Boeing a few billion dollars extra. And then it turned out that the head of Boeing was negotiating with a negotiator who was representing the Air Force to come to work for Boeing as soon as they got the deal through.
Right. I've read about that case. I mean, it's just another example of this collusion between mega corporations and government. And this is not free enterprise. That's corporatism.
It sure is, and it gives incest a bad name. Well, our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're up there in the Great Northwest and you'd like to talk to Dr. Blaylock before we have to let you go for the evening, again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the book, of course, is available if you'd like to know more about it. It's Dr. Blaylock's book on cancer. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's, pardon me, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. More. We're going to have a four-tape set that will go along with the book very soon, so that you can read the book and then you can listen to the tapes and you can really get the information down, because you're going to have to, if you believe this, and I happen to believe this, it's very true, for your sake and for the sake of your family, you're going to have this information at your fingertips, and learning how, of course, to prepare the foods, which foods to prepare, which foods to avoid, and certainly even the spices are important. We've got, is this Paula calling from Spokane? Hi, Paula.
Hi, this is so wonderful. I hesitate to call in.
Well, now, have you called before?
I have, yes.
All right, good to have you with us.
Okay, I'd like to ask Dr. Blaylock, where would you find this pure olive oil that he's talking about?
Where would you find the pure olive oil that you're talking about, that the kind that would really not have the hazelnut or the other things mixed in with it?
I wish I had gotten a name for you, but there is a company in California that goes through a very meticulous process to manufacture it. Their company was given, the name of the company was given to me by Raymond Francis. He has a program called Beyond Health. You just look up Raymond Francis on the internet, and he tells about the oil.
Well, now, if it is green, would that be a pretty good indication it's the real olive oil?
Well, it'll tell you have olive oil in it, and that's what you see in most of the Italian olive oils, is that it contains about 20 to 30% olive oil. Some have 50% olive oil, and so it'll turn green, but it'll be very clear looking.
All right, so you want to get the sort of cloudy material then?
Right. This company that Raymond Francis tells about, he'll give the name of the company, but it is highly purified, probably some of the most highly manufactured, high standards for olive oil.
Is it a lot more expensive than what you find in store?
Very expensive.
Oh.
Very, very expensive.
But, you know, you don't use that much in your cooking.
Right.
And, you know, if it's really going to give you some additional protection, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to have it.
Well, there's two ways you can do that. One, for your cooking, you can use the commercial extra virgin olive oil and add the turmeric to it, as I described. Just put the oil in the pan and put, you know, cover the top of the oil with turmeric. That combination will regenerate the extra virgin olive oil to be a very powerful anti-cancer. Then if you want to, say, dip bread in extra virgin olive oil, you can get the very expensive one, because you're not going to eat a whole lot of that.
Okay, anything else, Paula?
Yes. Could he recommend, is there anything that you could take that would inhibit allergies?
Probably one of the most powerful is quercetin. Quercetin is a flavonoid you can buy in a capsule in a lot of health food stores. But about 500 to 1,000 milligrams three times a day will powerfully inhibit most of your allergies.
Okay, thank you.
Your magnesium is also very important at inhibiting allergies.
And did you cover that in your health and nutrition secrets that can save your life?
It's not. I don't specifically talk about allergies. But I talk about the immune enhancement effect and how you can regulate it using things like quercetin. But quercetin and magnesium in combination with vitamin C generally will dramatically improve most allergies, particularly hay fevers.
Okay, Paul, anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye. And let's see who we have. Somebody else is calling in here. And we'll be with them in just a moment here. And it looks like we have Bill calling, and Bill is calling from Coeur d'Alene. Oh, hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I have sort of a stupid question, but thought I'd ask it anyway. What about these soy products that are on the market? They're substituted for meat.
All right. What about the soy products that they meat substitutes?
Well, I'm opposed to the use of these soy products for several reasons. Number one, soy has the highest level of glutamic acid, glutamate in it, of any plant food. When you hydrolyze it, that is when you liquefy it, it becomes very powerful. And there's a 25-year study done in Hawaii which indicated that people who ate the most soy products had the greatest incidence of dementia and shrinkage of their brain. They were destroying brain cells. And that was based on soy intake.
Is that related to MSG? Is that similar?
Yeah, the monosodium glutamate is just the sodium salt of glutamic acid.
All right,
it's glutamic acid that's doing the damage.
All right, Bill, that's your answer. Any other questions?
Well, the other bad thing about soy, let me add something else about soy, is because of its high glutamic acid, those with brain tumors, their tumors will grow a lot faster. The other thing is it's been found that soy products actually make breast cancer grow faster. And that's because soy contains genistein, which increases the aromatase enzyme, which is associated with incurable breast cancer. So soy is stimulating the enzyme that makes breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and colon cancer incurable. So that would be another reason to avoid soy products.
Okay, Bill, anything else?
No, just thank you for having Dr. Blaylock on.
All right, well, fine. Thanks very much for calling. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, and let's see. Now, of course, the books that Dr. Blaylock has written, Excitotoxin, that's Taste That Kills, the story of monosodium glutamate and MSG and aspartame, his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, an excellent book we have, and we all have going along with that, and we suggest people get Life-Saving Secrets, a four-tape set that really tend to give you more information. Right now, I believe we have Jeanette from Watsonville. Jeanette, we're going to have to bid adieu to our listeners up in the Great Northwest. Do you mind hanging on?
Oh, sure. I just have a quick question. No, that's fine.
All right, fine. Will you hang on? We'll get to you just as soon as we get to the break. But
This
is the time when we want to just mention to our listeners in the Great Northwest that Radio Liberty is supported by people who listen to our programs and believe we have information you're not going to get elsewhere. So if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to actually get copies of our latest newsletter and you don't subscribe, why, we'll be glad to send you one. Just give us that call, 1-800-544-8927. Then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because the battle we're engaged in is truly a spiritual battle being fought on a political, cultural, ideological, educational, financial, even on a medical battlefield, because I believe that there are forces behind all of these various conditions, various states that are coming from the dark side. I mean, how else could you just explain suppressing information that could save people's lives? Well, maybe it's accidental. I don't think so. Under any circumstances, please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and I'm bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're talking about his book on national strategies for cancer. We have Jeanette on the line from Watsonville. Jeanette, how are you doing?
Oh, fine. I have a quick question. I missed part of your program.
Well, shame on you. You should always be there right exactly. Well, but
actually, I was ordering doctor's book.
Then, of course, you're forgiven.
So I missed part of it. But when you talk about soy, do you mean also soy milk?
Particularly soy milk.
Oh.
Because soy milk is hydrolyzed.
Oh, yeah.
It brings up the glutamate, which makes it highly absorbable.
Oh, man.
Plus, you know, if it contains genistein, and not all the soy milk does, but most of it's going to contain varying amounts of genistein. Like I said, it's been shown to significantly promote the growth and spread of breast cancers.
Oh.
Jenna, if it makes you feel any better, I'm going to have to give up cottage cheese, which I love. I mean, you know, and I've been eating it regularly, but that and my milk. But I think it's so important that we have this information. I wish I'd had this information 10 or 20 years ago.
Well, I just bought a new supply of soy milk today.
All right. Well, you can go ahead and drink it, but I would not be getting any more.
No, I won't. But what about rice milk? I mean, what is rice? What can we drink instead of milk then?
Well, rice milk is the problem with it is a lot of sugar in it. Mm. Cancer patients certainly want to avoid sugar, and people with degenerative brain disorders want to avoid sugar because sugar causes a change, alteration in the protein, particularly enzymes, increases free radical generation, which is associated with all these diseases. Sugar is also an immune suppressant, so it tends to make cancers grow faster. And rice milk is very, very sweet. Most of these products that they're using as milk substitutes are very sweet. Now, if you say you like cereal in the morning and you want a little milk on it, what I would recommend would be goat's milk.
Okay.
Goat's milk is very much like human milk,
and
that's the advantage. Is its protein structure and all is a lot like human milk.
Okay, I did order your book, so I'm looking forward to reading it. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you very much, Jeanette. And again, our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have any questions at all, but this is really such an important subject because so many people are having cancer. So many of my friends, I suppose because my friends are getting older now, I don't know quite why that is, unless maybe they've been with me here in Santa Cruz, the doctors I've worked with, but so many of them have developed prostatic cancer and either had to have radical surgery or radiation. And, well, it's just, it's knowing this one thing I've never heard before, the relationship between drinking milk and prostatic cancer. Is there anything else we could do to avoid prostatic cancer other than just growing older?
Well, the other things you need to do is eat lots of fruits and vegetables. You need to have a high intake of the DHA, the omega-3 type fatty acids, significantly reduce your risk, increase your intake of selenium.
Now, where would we get the selenium? Would we take it in capsule form?
Take it in capsule form. It comes as selenium methionine, usually. Also, garlic is high in selenium. You know, in fact, they even make a selenium-enhanced garlic extract.
Well, now, would that be allicin? Would allicin have selenium in it, or would that be separate from allicin?
It would probably be separate if they purify the allicin. Usually, the more complete or whole garlic extract, what they call aged garlic extract, has a lot of selenium in it. Most of your cancer studies with garlic extract were done with aged garlic extract, and it's a combination of the allicin and the selenium and several other components in the garlic, which powerfully inhibits the growth of cancer as well as arteriosclerosis. Quercetin, the flavonoid quercetin, is a powerful inhibitor of prostate cancer. And that's because it inhibits inflammation of the prostate gland. It's very good for chronic prostatitis. Several studies have shown dramatic improvements in chronic prostatitis, and we know chronic prostatitis often leads to prostate cancer. So quercetin is a very important one, and quercetin inhibits the aromatase enzyme that's associated with prostate cancer. Curcumin, the flavonoid, which you can buy as a supplement, is also an extremely powerful inhibitor of all cancers, but particularly prostate cancers. So there's many, many things you can do. Silymarin, which is from milk thistle, the silymarin is a very powerful prostate cancer inhibitor. Vitamin E succinate and the gamma tocopherol, which is a form of vitamin E, both inhibit inflammation. They're very powerful cancer inhibitors, particularly prostate cancer. So there's many, many things you can do, and when you add them together, you get a very powerful effect at inhibiting prostate cancer, even if you already have prostate cancer. Modified citrus pectin has been shown to inhibit the spread of prostate cancer so that it doesn't tend to metastasize.
Now, is that citrus pectin, would that be something we get from apples?
Yes, but it's enzymatically altered so that it produces a different type of configuration of the pectin protein. And that modified citrus pectin, which you can buy as a supplement, has been tested in cancer research and found to be good at inhibiting not just prostate cancers, but many types of cancers.
Well, you know, the old adage, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, then certainly there is something to be said for that.
Yeah, the apples contain several anti-cancer flavonoids, one of which is chlorogenic acid, and that's why I recommend the Macintosh apple, because it's been shown to have the highest content of chlorogenic acid, which is a cancer inhibitor.
Well, my wife went out and got some delicious apples. They didn't have any Macintosh. It's delicious with a very red, very intensely red skin.
Right.
Is it the skin of the apple, or is it the apple itself that's so important?
Well, the apple itself, but the skin, of course, has the highest concentration. The only problem with eating the skin, it also has the highest concentration of pesticides and herbicides. So generally don't recommend eating the skins of apples. But the apple itself has a lot of these flavonoids that are cancer inhibitors.
Now, what about the apple seeds? And the seeds are these various fruits that we talk about.
Well, some of the seeds have shown considerable amount of activity. For instance, grapeseed extract contains some proanthocyanidins, which are very powerful cancer inhibitors, as well as inhibit arteriosclerosis and very protective of brain cells and blood vessels. So we know that some of the seeds are very powerful, like also grapefruit seed extract is a very powerful inhibitor of all bacteria, viruses, fungi. It makes an excellent mouthwash. So we know that there are some components in seeds that are very powerful at inhibiting various diseases, including cancer.
Well, now, what about fresh-squeezed orange juice and fresh-squeezed grapefruit juice? Is this a healthy thing for you?
Generally, it would be. You know, your orange juice, of course, is a little sweet, but I would not discourage anyone from using it as long as they didn't already have cancer. But as a cancer preventative, orange juice contains a flavonoid called hesperidin, which is a rather potent cancer inhibitor, as well as it protects all cells against free radical damage. One of the things we know about cancer is very iron dependent. Cancers require a continuous supply of iron in order to grow, and that if you restrict the iron content, the cancer cells tend to stop growing. And that's one of the areas of research in cancer treatment is ways to restrict iron. Well, we know several of the flavonoids are very powerful at binding iron so that the cancers can't use it. Some of the most powerful are hesperidin, which is found in oranges, and quercetin, which you find in peas and onions and apples, bind iron very tightly. Curcumin is very good at binding iron. So all of these things, part of the method by which they inhibit cancer growth is by binding the iron so that it denies access to the cancer.
Well, now, what about, and I've asked you this before, but I wanted you to tell this audience, what about the orange juice and the grapefruit juice you buy in cartons at the local local store, the Safeway or the supermarket?
I generally don't recommend that for several reasons. One is the pesticide and herbicide content, but the main thing is the fluoride content. Most of those juices contain rather high concentrations of fluoride, so I would not recommend drinking them.
Well, is that because they actually add the fluoride to it as a secondary thing, or is it simply how would the fluoride get in there?
Well, some of the companies use fluoridated water when they reconstitute it.
In other words, they're making concentrate and then they're reconstituting it then.
Right, and so when they add the water to it, it's fluoridated. I called one of the companies in Florida and asked them about it, and they admitted it, that they use fluoridated water.
Why would they do something that dumb? Well, I suppose that they're probably victims of government propaganda like most of the rest of the people are.
Well, the next question they asked me is, well, what's the matter with fluoride? Are you allergic to it?
I hope you gave them the three-hour discourse on why fluoride is bad.
I did, but I don't think it sunk in.
The thing is, seems so ridiculous. I mean, would our government suggest that we put fluoride in the drinking water when, you know, it was harmful? And, of course, if you go down the line, it decreases the sperm count and increases infertility and, you know, what it does to the bones and the brains and the heart and the enzyme systems. And, you know, people say this couldn't be true because it was my doctor would never be recommending it. And the trouble is their doctor has never heard the truth.
Well, that's it. And you know, one of the really impressive studies that was done at the Battelle Research Institute, which is a very high-tech institute, and was conducted at the insistence of the United States Congress. And what they found is that fluoride added to water increased the growth of tumors 25%. So that if you had a population drinking fluoridated water and they happen to have cancer, their cancer is going to grow 25% faster. Another study that was also funded by the United States government, in which they looked at three fluoridated cities compared to three unfluoridated cities, in which they matched all the different characteristics, and they found there was about a six-fold increase in bone cancer in young men in the fluoridated communities. And that's because fluoride accumulates in the bones. And a more recent study looked at these young men that were getting the bone cancer, and when they looked at the amount of fluoride in their bone, it was up to 80,000 parts per million fluoride. So anywhere from 60 to 80,000 parts per million fluoride in these young men's bones was enough to initiate the bone cancer, the osteogenic sarcoma. We also know that there's a dramatic increase in oral cancers when the tissues in your mouth are exposed to fluoride. So here's people going to their dentist, getting fluoride treatments, and washing with fluoridated mouthwashes and toothpaste, and we know that there's a dramatic increase in oral cancers associated with that. So fluoride's a very potent carcinogenic substance. We know that it inhibits the DNA enzyme repair enzymes, which, when we look at human studies and diseases in which the DNA repair enzymes are inhibited, there's a dramatic increase in cancer. For instance, in a condition called xeroderma pigmentosa, in which people are born without the ability to repair their DNA, they have a 2,000-fold increase in skin cancer and a 12-fold increase in cancers of their internal organs. So we see that these repair enzymes are very, very important in preventing cancer. And here you have a substance, fluoride, that is a powerful inhibitor of these DNA repair enzymes, and it inhibits them at a very low concentrations, the amount that's being added to water. Mercury does the same thing. It inhibits these DNA repair enzymes as well as antioxidant enzymes. So that's why mercury and fluoride are both associated with increased cancer rates.
And yet they're telling us we should all take our flu shots, even though the virus that they've made the vaccine for isn't the virus that's circulating around, but it all has thimerosal in it. All the influenza vaccine has, the mercury additive to it, and they want everybody to take it, including children, and it just doesn't make sense. Why would anybody do something that stupid or recommend something that stupid unintentionally?
Well, if the parents knew how dangerous this was and how much was known about it, and if the elderly and middle-aged people knew just how much was known about the toxicity of the mercury they're getting with each one of these influenza vaccines, they would be absolutely horrified. The parents would be ready to march on Washington, because we have absolute proof that that mercury dramatically interferes with the formation of those children's brains. It increases the degeneration of the connections in their brain, and it impairs their brain for a lifetime. And there is a very close correlation to autism, ADD, all these brain and learn disorders and learning disorders. And the older people, we know that the doses of mercury each year or each 6 months dramatically increases their risk of developing degenerative brain disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, because these are the very same chemicals that interfere with the very same biochemical processes in the brain that are associated with these diseases. There's no question about this. These things have been proven. They're known. They're no longer speculation. These things have been proven in numerous laboratories. But the problem is there's so much money being made by promoting vaccination that this research is being kept from the public so that they won't know the danger they're in.
And that, of course, is crass indifference to human suffering and the damage is being done. And of course, what they've done is create a situation where you no longer can sue the companies that are intentionally harming people, because the Congress has set up a special fund to compensate people. The only trouble is try to get any money out of it. You'll be old and gray before you ever get your settlement with the government. They'll fight you at every step to prevent you from getting a settlement from the fund that was set up to compensate people hurt from vaccines. Well, let's get back to our subject of cancer, although this other is a fascinating, fascinating subject, and we want to cover that some other time. But what about peanut butter? I love peanut butter. Is peanut butter harmful as far as predisposing to cancer or other diseases?
Well, almost all of your peanut butters are contaminated with a carcinogenic fungus, no matter how expensive your brand of peanut butter. We know that this is a very powerful inducer of liver cancer. Plus, the peanut butter has oils in it that are pro-carcinogenic. They have a lot of sugar in it that inhibits your immune system. So consumption of regular doses of peanut butter is rather hazardous. If you're a cancer patient, of course, I think you would just a terrible thing to do to consume peanut butter, because you have so many factors in the peanut butter that increase the growth and spread of cancer. I just would not recommend it at all.
Well, now what about the consumption of meat? Certainly America is one of the largest meat consumers in the world, and most Americans, I don't know how many pounds of meat they eat a year, but an awful lot. I don't think there's any country that where we eat more meat per capita. Is meat itself harmful?
Well, not meat itself. You know, the vegetarians are purists, and they don't want any meat of any form at all. Generally, you need a combination of meats and vegetables. Now, if it wasn't for the fact that the fish was contaminated with mercury, the optimal diet would be primarily fish combined with fruits and vegetables. If you did that, and these studies have been done, that is by far the healthiest diet we know of. Your incidence of disease would fall dramatically. You would feel much better. your mind would be much clearer. Now, generally what I recommend people eat things like the organically raised chicken or turkey would be fine. I would avoid the red meats, the pork, the beef, and that's for several reasons. Number one, we know beef, as we already discussed, has a high incidence of lymphoma leukemia in the herds. This is a virally caused cancer. And according to USDA, they're allowed to sell the meat from a cancerous cow as long as they remove the tumor itself and don't sell the tumor. But this rest of the tissue in the cow is infiltrated with this virus. Now, if you eat a red meat and you have it rare, and you're eating that warm red center or the cool red center of the meat, you're consuming a healthy dose of known carcinogenic viruses. And there's real questions being raised in the scientific literature of whether this is inducing lymphomas and leukemias in people. When they looked at the meatpacking industry, that the people that work there have a much higher incidence of leukemia and lymphoma than people who work at other occupations. So we know that consumption of red meat and even working with the red meat because of these carcinogenic viruses increases your risk. And I just shudder when I see people eating rare beef. I mean, to me, that's insane because of this known high incidence of lymphoma and leukemia in cattle. Like I said, some herds, 80% of the cattle are infected.
Have we always had that high an incidence of lymphoma and leukemia in our cattle, or is this something that's growing in, you know, in the incidence?
Well, they haven't been recording it that long, but the veterinarians have always known that that's the leading cancer in cattle. For some reason, they're very prone to this leukemia and lymphoma virus. And they pass it through the milk to their offspring, so the calves grow up, they develop leukemia and lymphoma and high incidence as well.
Well, now, we've always thought that, you know, there was a species barrier, so we didn't get animal viruses. In other words, we didn't get the cancer viruses that our cats and dogs and domesticated animals have gotten, and now there's increasing thought that we are susceptible to them?
Well, what is being discovered is that you can take animal viruses that normally will not transpose into another species, but they can combine with other viruses and they can move from species to species. This is one of the things we see with the coronavirus. So we know that this occurs, and we know that these viruses mutate and confuse with animal viruses and infect humans. So, yes, that's occurring, and it has been documented in virology laboratories.
Well, what about the digestive tract? Will our digestive tract destroy these viruses, or are they just going to go right through our wall and right into our system, you know, from the red meat?
Yeah, some are destroyed and some are not. We know that some of these viruses are quite acid resistant. We also know that a large population of Americans have very low stomach acid content. The older you get, the less stomach acid you have. Hypochloria and achlorhydria is very common as you get older. So you start losing your stomach acid. Well, then you're less able to kill bacteria and viruses. They will very easily penetrate through the wall of the intestine and into the lymphatics and the blood vessels and pass throughout the body. So that's a common thing to happen. Now, what happens in the cattle is all this use of antibiotics and steroids and the feed they get suppresses their immunity, so they're even more prone to develop these carcinogenic viruses.
I wonder if the fact that we contaminated the human species with the polio vaccine initially, of course it had an SV40 in it, but it was grown, the polio vaccine was grown in the kidney of the cultures of these green monkeys and then the rhesus monkeys, and we of course gave the vaccines that were laden with all these monkey viruses. You know, we know there were at least 40 separate monkey viruses. Do you think the presence of these monkey viruses, which we've contaminated the human species with, and it plays any part along with these other animal viruses? Do we have any idea?
Well, we know that there was a simian immunodeficiency virus that was transferred through the polio vaccine. There were at least 36 different viruses that were known to contaminate this vaccine, many of which are immune suppressant. We know that the measles vaccine is an immune suppressing virus, just like HIV. So when you're giving live measles vaccine to children by the millions, you're giving them an immune suppressing virus. Now that's well known. Everybody in the field of virology knows that and accepts that. There's no contention there. But they just don't tell the parents. They don't tell people that are getting these vaccines that when you get the measles vaccine and the polio vaccine and all these other vaccines piled on top, many of those are immune suppressing. That allows these viruses to start growing in the brain. One of the studies that I quote in an article I wrote recently showed that 20% of the brains of people that were autopsied had live measles virus growing in their brain tissues chronically. Something like 45% of the autopsied individuals had measles virus growing in other tissues in their body. So 20% of the people that are getting these measles vaccine are having live virus grow in their brain throughout the rest of their life. And we know that these measles virus in the brain can mutate and start destroying brain cells.
Well, now, what about if you had measles and you got it normally through just a direct contact with somebody else? And we know that occasionally the people would get encephalitis with it. It wasn't very often, but they rarely did. But were they able to handle that virus much more efficiently so they wouldn't be having this high rate of chronic measles infection of the central nervous system?
Right. Part of the problem is the way they introduce these viruses is they're doing it by injection. Well, that's not the normal way you're exposed to viruses. Most viruses enter through the mucous membrane, either the mouth, the nose, lungs, or through the GI tract. Well, when they go through the GI tract or one of these other ways, they pass through the lymphatic system. And so that this produces what's called IgA antibodies, which destroy and neutralize the virus, so it never really enters the body, and you get your immune reaction. That's the natural exposure to these viruses. And we find that people that are naturally exposed to these diseases develop long-term immunity, whereas what we're beginning to find more and more now is that people that are given the injections by vaccination get no protection at all. For instance, virtually 80% of the cases of pertussis outbreaks that have occurred in the United States were in vaccinated children. We're seeing the same things in foreign countries with the people that have been vaccinated against pertussis or the various other bacterial diseases. The vaccinated people are the ones that are developing the disease. The unvaccinated have far less incidence of these diseases. So it appears that vaccination may make you more prone to develop the disease in the first place. And now we're beginning to understand why, because a lot of these vaccines tend to suppress the immune system. And a lot of these viruses then take up residence in the body chronically and can be reactivated. And this reactivation process is through free radical generation. That's what's particularly scary, is because all of us produce free radicals all the time.
Well, there's a tremendous propaganda campaign out there that if you don't get your child vaccinated, why, you are a danger to everybody else. You are doing away with the herd immunity. We have to have the herd immunity to do away with these diseases. And I don't think they're being entirely forthright with this on so much of what's going on today. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blylock. Welcome your calls here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I want to mention that Dr. Blaylock has written at least three books, The Excitotoxin, The Taste It Kills, and there's a four-tape set that, on that called Aspartame, I believe, goes along with that. The book, Health and Nutrition Secrets, it can save your life, and I think we've sold more of that than any other book we've ever had, except maybe my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and there's a four-tape set that goes with that called Life-Saving Secrets, and of course there's the cancer book we're talking about this evening, and we're going to put a four-tape set together with that, because sometimes you read the book and then you listen to the tapes and you really begin to get the grasp of what this is all about and what the things that you're going to have to start thinking about, and how you will want to change your dietary habits and other habits if you have a cancer, or to avoid cancer, or if you are under treatment, because we're going to talk this last half hour about the things that you would want to think about if you actually have a cancer at the present time, or somebody, a loved one does. So if you'd like to get more information, our telephone number, of course, is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, our latest newsletter deals with the anti-Semitism that is sweeping the world. What is its real source? Well, you may be very, very surprised when you read the November Radio Liberty newsletter. We hope many of you will want to get the copy. And, of course, we hope maybe down the line you'll want to subscribe. But if not, at least give us a call if you'd like a free copy of our November newsletter. The number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we want to mention our website. It's radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can go there and listen to our programs 5 hours a day, 3 hours on Radio Liberty. There's a link to America Newsnet at 7 o'clock Pacific time every morning, and then we do another hour on GCNLive.com. That's GCNLive.com, and that is every afternoon at 3 o'clock Pacific time. And you can go directly to their website, hear that program, and then the following hour you can hear either on GCN Live or on Radio Liberty. But we hope you'll go to our website, pull down our newsletters, notice the various items that are there. You're welcome to reproduce anything from our website. We want you to help us get news out across America, because there are many, many problems we have, and you're not going to hear a lot of these problems discussed through the regular media. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're talking about his book on cancer. And if you're out there in the listening audience who would like to give us a call, our number here is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, Russell, let's talk about what happens when you have a cancer. The doctor says you've got a cancer, you're going to need surgery or surgery and chemotherapy, and so you've decided to go ahead and undertake routine medical treatment. What should you be doing to try to help deal with that cancer and help deal with the complications of chemotherapy, which can be really very, very miserable?
Well, most patients find out that if they follow some basic guidelines, that if they go through chemotherapy, even the high-dose chemotherapy, either they'll develop no nausea and vomiting, they will not be weak and exhausted the way most patients are, or the symptoms will be dramatically reduced.
What about losing your hair? That's one of the things that's so distressing.
Well, it's very difficult to stop that, but even the patients that take the combined antioxidants find that they don't tend to lose the hair as much, or when they do, the hair comes back much faster.
All right.
And that's particularly important, is to have the rapid return of the hair, and it comes back very healthy. Because what's happening with the chemotherapy, it's producing so many free radicals that destroys the hair follicle, and that's why the hair falls out. Fortunately, it's temporary in most people. another thing that they need to do is and understand is that you need to prepare yourself before you start these treatments. What we find in most of our research is that if you start the antioxidants like the vitamin E succinate and the vitamin C and the carotenoids and the flavonoids, if you start these before your treatment, then that will protect your normal cells against damage by these drugs. All of the chemotherapy agents damage DNA. At least 20 of them have been shown to cause cancer themselves. And this is kind of the deep, dark secret of oncology. They don't want to talk about what they call secondary cancers. And these are cancers that are actually caused by your treatment itself. But the incidence can vary between 5 to 10% to as high as 30% secondary cancers. So we know that it's a big problem. By using these nutritional protections of your normal cell, the incidence of secondary cancers is dramatically reduced. And that's because you're protecting your normal cells against these chemotherapy agents. Now, what a lot of oncologists will tell their patient is don't take any antioxidants, don't take any of these supplements, because it'll interfere with cancer treatment. All of the studies that have been done have shown that that is just not only not true, but it's just the opposite. Most of these antioxidants, like your vitamin E succinate and flavonoids, not only do not interfere with the treatment, but they make the treatment much more effective. That is because they make the cancer cell a lot more susceptible to the chemotherapy and radiation treatments. This has particularly been shown in things like the curcumin, the quercetin, the vitamin E succinate. When you take a multiple vitamin that contains all of the carotenoids, like alpha-carotene and beta-carotene, canthaxanthin, zeaxanthin, when you mix all of those together, you get a profound enhancement of the effectiveness of chemotherapy and radiation treatments. This was demonstrated very dramatically in one of the cancer journals and textbooks in which they radiated animals that had implanted human cancers. And they found that the antioxidants actually protected the normal cells in the field of radiation, but made the cancer die at a much higher rate than it would normally. So these animals had a much higher cure rate when they combined, even using beta carotene alone, they had a much higher cure rate than the animals that were just radiated alone.
And you actually have a section in your book where all this is discussed, don't you?
All of it's discussed, all of it's documented. You can look in the references in the back. I don't have all the references for everything I say because it would take up most of the book. But, you know, all the references are there. All of this is in scientific peer-reviewed journals. And it's all being done by people who are the primary researchers in the area of cancer.
All right. Well, so this is one reason to get the book. Bill was calling from Santa Cruz, and we just lost him. If he wants to call back, we'd be glad to take his call. But right now, let's go to Herman, who's calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Good evening. Thanks for this program. I always enjoy having a doctor on with the new information. I just want to mention that we helped somebody in our area who had stage 4 colon cancer. We got told him about Dr. Brzezinski in Houston, and he was literally had to be helped on the plane to get down there. It was probably within weeks of dying, and he is in remission now, and his cancers are shrinking. Now, he's still not out of the woods, and because he was so far gone, they, in addition to their regular protocol, they also gave him daily intravenous nutrients. I don't know if they're amino acids or whatever, but it was an extra thing.
Well, they did give him a chemotherapy as well, didn't they?
Yes, and then they instituted chemotherapy, which he still has a few more to go. He is has made an amazing comeback, and he's put on weight. Of course, the jury is still out for the final thing, but I can tell people. And again, Dr. Brzezinski can't handle all kinds of cancers with success, but many he can. And so I'd highly recommend people avail themselves, get your tape, interviews, from Radio Liberty of your guests that talked about it, or the book, The Brzezinski Cure. And then I'd like to see if Dr. Blaylock would like to comment on the Brzezinski clinic.
Are you at all acquainted with Dr. Brzezinski's work?
Well, yes, briefly. Basically, what he's done is isolated a particular protein substance that inhibits some cancers. Some of his dramatic results have been in childhood brain cancer, some of the really incurable ones. He's had some rather dramatic results. Of course, the government did everything they could to try to destroy him, but he's a serious researcher. He has very good, impeccable credentials. He's not some fly-by-night nutcase. He's a very serious investigator, and he's done something that's demanding a lot of attention. I would encourage people to use the things that I recommend in my book in addition to what he does. Because what you want to do in cancer, you want to interfere with every step of the cancer process. What I describe in the book is a way to interfere with virtually everything that the cancer requires to exist and grow. By adding Brzezinski's protocol to it, this particular protein extract, would add one more nail to the coffin of these cancer cells. So I would envision that if you combine the two, you would get an even more dramatic effect. We've had some incredible effects on some of the cancer patients I've seen. You know, they were terminal patients as well. And they went from just being racked with terrible pain, walking with canes, given a few months to live at most, and just had a dramatic return of their energy level. All their pain went away, full of vigor, lost weight, felt good, and lived years after they were supposed to be dead. So, you know, these things work. But you have to follow the whole program. You can't cheat on any aspect of it. If you do the whole program, stick to all of it, avoid these foods we know that promote cancer growth, and enhance it with the, you know, your program with all these flavonoids and vitamin mixtures that you need to do, your results are going to be rather dramatic. It varies in the person. Some people, all they need is a little bit of help with the different things I outline, and they'll make a dramatic recovery. Some people have so much genetic damage, so much pollution, so much detoxification problems, that the chance of saving them is very slim. So that's why some people do real well and quite remarkable, and others don't. Everybody's individually biochemically different.
Herman, anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I tuned in late, so could you tell us where we could call for the book? I know you can't sell it on this program.
Well, you could just call the 800 number. They'll tell you where to get it.
And the title of the book?
It's called The Natural Strategies for Cancer, and what's the last word?
Patients.
For cancer patients, right.
Cancer patients.
Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. And believe me, it's only been out for a short period of time, and we're having a very difficult time getting it, but they promised to ship it within the next 3 days. The first case, they're already all gone. We'll be having a more, I think it's an important book. Thanks so much, Herman.
Okay, God bless you both. Bye-bye.
You too. And let's go to Bill, who's back again, calling from, of all places, Santa Cruz. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing fine.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
You have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. I had just had a newborn baby about 5 months ago, and before she was born, we researched the vaccine stuff with the whole mercury deal that's going on. My question is, the doctors that we talked to, all of them said that they didn't use the mercury anymore.
All right. What is the...
My advice to you is don't trust them, don't take them at their word, because most of them think that it has been removed. What you need to do is when you go there and they're going to get the vaccine, say, I want to see the package insert. Read on there under the ingredients if it has thimerosal in it. That's mercury. And a recent article came out in the Journal of the American Nutraceutical Association, which they reviewed the vaccine that had come out after it was supposed to have been removed. They found out that almost all of them still had the mercury.
Now, the doctor, I'm sure, doesn't know what's
going on. They don't know.
They really don't know.
They're assuming that the vaccine people are telling the truth and that the American Academy of Pediatrics is telling the truth. So it's not the doctor's fault. They're being lied to as well.
Okay, anything else?
Well, so...
I do have your radio on there because we're getting an echo, and I wonder if...
Okay, I'm away from it now.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
So are you saying that you shouldn't get vaccines at all? Is that...
That's a decision you're going to have to make, but
I give you this guideline. What the research is showing that giving live vaccines to children carries a significant danger. The problem is that these live viruses turn into persistent latent viruses, many of which enter the brain. They're going to be there for a lifetime. And they can result in neurological disease and as well as numerous other diseases. I would be very hesitant if it was my child to have any live virus injected into my child.
And then how do you feel about things like tetanus toxoid or diphtheria toxoid, which are not live viruses but are simply antitoxins?
Well, here's the problem. I've written two articles now that's going to be appearing in two different journals.
Which
goes into this very... in much, much detail. What it shows is that getting the mercury out is going to help a lot, but it's not the sole problem. The problem is you're giving children too many vaccines over too short a period of time. That is shown to cause activation of the brain's immune system called the microglia system. And when you do that, these microglia begin to pour out enormous numbers of free radicals and two known excitotoxins in the brain. This brain is in the stage of very rapid development, so that this process of these immune reactants and the excitotoxins combined and the free radicals damage the synaptic connections in the brain, damage the pathway so that they don't form correctly, and this is why you're seeing autism. Autism is nothing but a collection of widespread synaptic damage in the brains of these children, and it's caused by over-vaccination, overstimulation of the immune system.
What about the mercury influence on it?
Well, the mercury is a very powerful stimulator of microglia, and it inhibits the protective system that keeps brain glutamate from rising too high. So mercury is a double toxin, and so when you add mercury on top of this, you get an even worse effect. And so that's why the mercury greatly compounds it. And we find that if you take children and you give them beta-carotene along with a multiple vitamin, the incidence of vaccine complications falls dramatically. So giving that child the multivitamin with beta-carotene in it is a tremendous protection against vaccine complications. But the main thing, what you want to do if you decide you're going to give the vaccines, is tell the doctor, I don't want any vaccine given any closer than 6 months, so that you separate your vaccines by a six-month period. That gives the immune system time to recover and cool down before the next vaccination.
And where are these articles that you have written going to be published?
One is going to be in the Journal of the American Nutraceutical Association. The other is going to be in the Journal of the American Physicians and Surgeons.
All right, fine. Well, maybe when those come out, you get copies to me, and we could... would appreciate that if we could give our listeners and the references to them. I will get the one from the Journal of the American Physicians and Surgeons. The other one I'm not acquainted with, but the article is pretty much the same.
Well, one is goes into a lot. It's a very long article. Goes into extreme detail, and it's a very technical article about the connection between autism, vaccination, and all these processes. The other is connecting the Gulf War syndrome and autism to over-vaccination.
All right. Well, if you would get those for me when you got them done, I'd really appreciate it. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask, Bill?
No, sir. That's good. Thank you.
But the thing is, look at that package insert, number one, and see what it says. The doctor doesn't read that package insert. He does. He gets his information from the detail man that's sent by the vaccine manufacturer, and his purpose is to get the doctor to get the vaccine. They don't care whether it's thimerosal in it. They don't care whether the children are hurt, because they're protected from any lawsuits, and they'll tell you anything. Just go ahead and get the thing sold. Now, I do not think that the doctor is intentionally lying to you. But check it out yourself. And then I think that what Dr. Blaylock says, certainly about the danger of too many vaccines, is so correct, because we're just challenging the immune system over and over again. They started out in the nursery giving hepatitis B vaccine, loaded down with thimerosal, and then when it was pointed out what was happening, oh, they said, oh, shucks, well, we'll just take it out now, and then we'll give it again. Well, why did they give it if it was harmful? Why did they take it out if it wasn't harmful? So they injured millions of our children with the vaccines, and nobody's responsible.
That's so, what's wrong with it.
That's what's wrong with it. And once they took away the ability of the people to sue the companies for a malpractice, why they created this situation where they have nothing to lose and everything to gain by giving us faulty vaccines. Because they're a lot cheaper. One of the reasons I've been told that they put the thimerosal in, I don't know if you've heard this, Russell, but if they want to make a vaccine that is really sterile, it's very expensive to do. But if you want to just do a sloppy job, you put the thimerosal in, it acts as a sterilizer, and then you don't have to worry about doing such a good job. Dr. Geyer's made that statement. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Yeah, thimerosal is an excellent antibacterial, antiviral.
Sure.
And it protects them so that the pharmaceutical company doesn't have to worry about somebody getting infected because they got sued a couple of times for it. So it's easy to put the thimerosal in there, sterilize the multi-dose vial, and not worry about it. Of course, we had in numerous studies show the terrible damaging effect on newborn brains, but they just ignored it.
And that is what's so unconscionable. They knew that they were harming our children, but they didn't care because they had protection, so they couldn't get sued. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you can have another question or comment. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. In fact, just as a side issue, I just comment that Eli Lilly got the Bush administration put pressure on Congress and the Senate to put a rider on the Office of Homeland Security bill so that Eli Lilly couldn't be sued for the thimerosal in their vaccine. Now, what did that have to do with Homeland Security? Absolutely nothing. They passed it without the Congress having any idea what would happen. It was only the outrage from parents across the country. They had to withdraw that. But why was the Bush administration so interested in making Eli Lilly immune from prosecution when they knew that the thimerosal was damaging to our children? This is really what's so concerning, that there seems to be that the people in government, and I'm not saying picking on the Bush administration anymore than any other administration, they're all corrupt, much more concerned about the profit margin than they are the safety of the American people. But of course, they have to always sell their concepts on over from the government. We're here to help you and protect you from those wicked people who want to exploit you, and then they turn around and protect the very wicked people who want to exploit us. So we got real problems, Russell. Well, you know, as you tell people about the benefits of nutrition, do you think they are really understanding the relationship between nutrition and cancer? Do you think the message is finally getting through?
Well, I don't think until, you know, the last 5 years has really been good books out there that explain to the subject to the public why these things work. I think that it's important that people understand why it works, that it's a very high-tech, very scientifically backed-up treatment method, that it's not just something dreamed up by people and trying to sell products. This is something that has good science behind it, and that a lot of these cancer specialists are taking these supplements themselves. This is one of the big shocks. We see this in Alzheimer's research. These people are taking supplements because of what they're finding in their own research. It's so impressing them that they're taking it, yet they don't tell the general public. What I'm trying to do is I'm looking at the research, going through all of these papers, putting all this information together so people can take advantage of it.
I think that's really a wonderful service. You know, there was a gentleman, I think he was a minister, and he came up with something 20, 25 years ago with something called the Hallelujah Diet. And he was actually helping a lot of people with cancers so that, you know, they were recovering from it just as he had. And then, of course, Dr. Day got into this and talked a great deal about it. But we never had the scientific explanation of why these things worked. And that's why I think that your research and your books are really so important, because it's all well documented from the peer-reviewed literature.
Yeah, I think that's really critical, and it's important that when we get new information that is well documented and carefully done studies, we need to get it to the public quickly, particularly about toxicity. You know, the amount of information, for instance, we have about fluoride and mercury and lead is so critical that the public know about it now. We can't wait 10 years, 20 years, then decide, oh, now we'll release this information. Millions will be ruined. Their lives will be destroyed by withholding this information. And we have so much research out there that is so critical that people know. And that's what I want to do.
Now, there was an interesting article I just read this evening about some school bus, and somebody had broken a mercury thermometer. And, you know, there are a couple of drops of mercury that were somehow loose on the school bus. And they were talking about quarantining the school bus because a couple of drops of mercury were there and the real danger. And there is real danger from mercury toxicity, especially if it gets vaporized into the air in that school bus. And yet, every day across America, there are tens of thousands of mercury fillings put into the mouths of the people in a compound that releases the mercury into the bloodstream of Americans. And anybody who suggests that there's danger in putting mercury fillings into people is somehow put into the same category as those who believe there are black helicopters out there. And your information is really so important in that field as a whole.
Well, I give a case in the book Health and Nutrition Secrets of a young man who was took some teeth, had fillings in it, and he put it in a frying pan on the stove and was going to cook it out, and he thought it was silver. Well, he poisoned his entire family and killed himself. The house was so terribly contaminated they had to tear the house down. And this was just from teeth with amalgam fillings in it. So, you know, here all of these people are getting mouthed filled with amalgam fillings, and the dentists are assuring them, because they're assured by the ADA, that it's all safe, and it's not.
And in fact, we have a 4-tape set now on mercury, and if you're out there in the listening audience and you really want to get the background of that, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927 and just inquire about the 4-tape set on mercury, and it gets into the dental fillings, it gets into the other sources of mercury which we're exposed to, and you're not getting the truth, unfortunately. Well, Russell, I want to thank you so much. I know it's getting late back where you are, but it's always a fascinating time talking to you. Have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I do thank you, because without you I wouldn't be able to give this information, but I think people need to be skeptical. They need to realize there's a tremendous body of information out there that they need access to, and they need to pay attention to that information, because it could save their lives.
Amen to that. Well, health and nutrition secrets that save your life, and of course, cancer secrets that can save your life. God bless you, Russell. Thanks very much, and I really appreciate your going for a 2-hour marathon, but it's great to have this information. We're going to get it out all across America.
Well, I appreciate it, Stan. Thank you very much.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.